So, James, would you just kind of tell me, let's start, if you wouldn't mind, by telling me how long you've been in Iran and where you've been.
Well, I've actually been in Iran quite a bit. I first came to Iran in 2007, the beginning of 2007. And since then, I've spent probably, I don't know, 14 or 15 months in the country.
And most...
I just left today. In fact, a couple hours ago, I was in Tehran, and right now I'm in Kuwait City.
And for this last leg of the trip, how long were you in Tehran?
Well, not only Tehran, but I was in Iran since October of 2008.
And is this the first time that you've been out of the country?
Well, no, I have a multi-entry visa, and so I came in and out. I mean, I went to a couple of film festivals, different places, Scotland and so on. So, you know, I come and go, but, you know, really I might be gone for 5 days and then come back.
Got it. Okay. Well, would you just kind of talk about, you know, what the last couple of days, I mean, really the last couple of weeks have been like for you, you know, what you've seen, if you wouldn't mind kind of just describing what you've been experiencing?
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, my project in Iran has been to make a documentary film about a middle school up in the north in the province of Mazandaran on the Caspian. So, you know, I had permissions, official permissions, to film the election because it was, you know, it was something that was happening in the country, and I thought, well, you know, maybe I can use it in my film somehow. And so I, on the day of the elections, June 12th, Friday, in the morning, I started filming in a polling center in a village up in Mazandaran province. And then in the afternoon, I drove down 4 hours to Tehran and filmed in two different polling centers in Tehran. And, you know, it seemed to me like a pretty normal election, very high turnout. You know, even in the late evenings, there were still long lines in Tehran to go vote. So it really seemed like everyone was going to vote. And, you know, in the weeks leading up to that, I was in and out of Tehran, and whenever I would ask people, taxi drivers, generally the consensus was that everyone was, you know, voting for Mousavi. They were tired of Ahmadinejad. I mean, there were some exceptions, but that was the overwhelming sense that I got in the month before the election was that Mousavi was the favorite among just about everybody I talked to, except maybe, you know, very old people up in the village or something like that who were quite happy with Ahmadinejad. But, you know, the more educated people, the principal of the school where I was filming, the principal of the high school also, you know, different people, they all said, we really want Mousavi. It seems much better. And so... I was quite surprised because when the official results were released, because it was my sense that actually Mousavi was the favorite to win. But you know, it's really hard to know exactly you know what was going on behind the scenes. But there were a couple things I think that made me a little bit suspicious of the process. One was that in Tehran, on the evening of the elections, even before the polls were closed around 5:30 or 6, there was a raid conducted on the Mousavi's campaign headquarters in Tehran. I don't know whether this was reported very much in the Western media, but I was there. I think about 45 minutes after it happened, and there was still a police cordon outside, and there were basically people being held hostage inside the building. And I filmed it. You know, it was still the elections. I had my permissions. You know, it was very dramatic. There were riot police everywhere, and you know, people shouting. And you know, every once in a while, a group of campaign workers for Mousavi would be let out of the building, and there was, you know, a huge cry would go up from the crowd that had gathered outside. And this had happened not only at that office, but also at the other offices of Mousavi campaign. Simultaneously, which leads me to think that it was something that was orchestrated from above. I don't really know the backstory on that, but um, it, it was a situation where armed men were without any identification at all, you know, burst into the campaign headquarters of Mousavi and were demanding hard drives and records and various things, and accusing the campaign of having involvement with foreign elements, this kind of thing. So, you know, that didn't lend a whole lot of confidence to the process, since they were already, you know, before the polls were closed, they were already raiding the headquarters of the opposing candidate. And also the fact that, you know, on the day of the elections, the internet was already down where I was up in the north. The internet did not work at all. And also the SMS network had been turned off the night before. I think that's significant because the SMS network was the mechanism by which the poll workers of the Mousavi campaign were to have reported any irregularities that they noticed at polling stations where they were assigned. So those were things that I noticed myself that seemed very strange for an election, that, you know, a government, you know, an incumbent candidate who basically has control over those kinds of things would shut down the telecommunications network, the internet, the SMS, and it seemed to me also conduct raids on the opposing candidates' offices. It made me think that something might be up. And when the official results came out, I was, I think, surprised, and not, clearly not the only one.
Yeah. When did you start noticing? I mean, when did you first see the unrest? You know, the people taking to the streets. Was it almost instantaneous once the election results were announced, or how did that develop?
Well, yeah, I think it was pretty much instantaneous. The reaction was instantaneous. You know, when people came out onto the streets, that might have been a little bit later. That happened on Saturday. But, you know, late on Friday night, suddenly, quite unexpectedly, the government, Ministry of Interior, came out with the official results of the election. I mean, not the final results of the election, but they basically said, you know, Ahmadinejad has won the election overwhelmingly. There's no chance that Mousavi, you know, could win. And that happened much earlier than people were expecting. I think the foreign press, who had gathered in the Ministry of Interior and were waiting for the results, expected those numbers to start coming out much, much later, because, you know, the polls had just closed. It was a very high turnout. Millions of people had voted, and suddenly the Ministry of Interior was giving people these numbers, which it didn't really change much after that. So they already had the answer. You know, they had already counted however many, you know, more than 40 million votes, apparently, only a few hours after the polls had closed. You know, prior to the election, most people who were analyzing the situation, it seems to me, were concluding that that if there were a high voter turnout, it would favor Mousavi, and that the most likely scenario would be a runoff vote. That is, you know, a candidate in this four-way race has to have higher than 50% of the vote in order to win in the first round. Most people were assuming that no one would get above 50%. In the first round, and that it would go into a second round of voting, and so people, you know, everyone that I know of was surprised to see it immediately go to Ahmadinejad by a landslide. Particularly surprising to see a landslide vote in favor of Ahmadinejad in places where he doesn't seem to have much support, like Kurdistan, Iranian Kurdistan, and also, you know, Tabriz, which is the hometown of Mousavi. That he would take those areas also by, you know, 60% majority, I think struck most people as rather strange.
And by the weekend, the protests started to ramp up. Could you describe some of the things that you have seen, if you've been in the streets at all, just what the scene has been once people did start taking to the streets?
Well, look, you know, this situation that we're seeing right now, where in the last few days, where there have been these violent clashes starting on Saturday, this most recent Saturday. This is kind of this is a direct result of the fact that the government in Iran did not allow people to have peaceful protests, because I actually did attend, although I like all the other foreign media, was banned from reporting as early as Saturday or Sunday after the elections, and told not to go onto the street, not to photograph, not to film. I still attended these rallies that were happening in those days. I attended the rally on Tuesday after the elections on Valeyasar Street, and I also observed the Musavi, pro-Musavi rally on Imam Khomeini Square on Thursday, right before Imam Khamenei gave his Friday prayer speech, in which he said, you have to basically accept the results, the official results of the election, and stop protesting them. And those protests that I observed in person were very peaceful. They were, in fact, silent protests. No one was chanting slogans. People were simply marching in silence and occasionally sitting down in the middle of the street where they were. And so it wasn't this kind of running battles along the streets of Tehran that we saw after the Friday speech of Imam Khamenei, Supreme Leader Imam Khamenei. So I think it's possible that they in the leadership of Iran, they simply wanted to make it impossible for these kinds of mass peaceful rallies to take place by basically cracking down on them with riot police and the other special forces and ordinary city police members. Now I think of the Pasdaran are involved, and the Basiji have been, I think, the most violent of all of them. So this has really forced the situation into this kind of violent confrontation that we've seen, because prior to that, as far as I had witnessed, although, there had been vandalism and acts of unrest happening on the streets after dark, and clashes between police and protesters after dark, the mass rallies, the vast majority of those protesting, those until last Friday, those were quite peaceful and very calm. So I think that this current situation is one that could have been avoided. I just think that probably the leadership of Iran made a calculation that they did not want a spiraling, peaceful escalation of protest against the elections. Because if you have peaceful protests where people can turn up and nothing's going to happen to them, well, those things are going to get pretty big pretty fast if in fact they represent the sentiments of a large number of people, which it seemed to me that they did. But now most people are afraid to join into these kind of running battles and confrontations with police, because a large number of people have been now killed, wounded, and arrested. And that's not something that the average person really wants to get into.
So I guess that leads me to this question. It's very difficult at this moment here in the West to get an idea of whether the protests are dying down or whether they are continuing to ramp up. What's your sense of things? It sounds like to me the government has been pretty successful in tamping down some of that anger. What's your sense of things?
Well, no, I think that's a mischaracterization of the situation, because the government can tamp down violently by basically banning all public protests and arresting everyone who comes out on the street. That's something the government is prepared to do. But what they're not able to do is quell the anger and the dissatisfaction and unhappiness that people feel about the situation. And that has been really quite exacerbated. I think also that there's been a lot of focus on the results of the election, and that people don't really believe them, and is it right, is it wrong? We'll probably never find out. But that was actually only really a pretext. for people to come out onto the streets and start to express dissatisfaction with the government, which is what they've been doing. And I think you've seen things kind of morph from an initial focus on the results of the election and demanding an annulment of the election results and a revote. But the actual sentiments of most people on the street, the young people, are really that they're simply fed up with the way things are run, and they would want to see changes in the country, you know, regardless of who's in power. The protest has become one of expressing more general dissatisfaction with the political social conditions in the country.
Do you think that this could escalate into something that actually does spark reasonably dramatic change in that country? Do you think that it will die down and things will go back to the way they were? What's your impression of how powerful that anger is?
Well, I think things are dying down in terms of the protests on the streets, simply because, you know, a lot of these more recent protests, these violent confrontations with the police forces of Tehran and other cities, have simply, you know, it's just become kind of untenable for most people to join in with those kinds of activities. I mean, you know, there have been old ladies out on the street breaking pavement stones and hurling them at riot police, but there's only so long that can go on. Now, I mean, but this is a multifaceted, multi-layered affair. I mean, you have right now a big rift between people in the ruling elite of Iran on the one side, right? The Rafsanjanis of Iran are quite unhappy with the Ahmadinejads of Iran, and there is a kind of a battle of wills going on in places like the holy city of Qom, where, as I understand it, Rafsanjani has been lobbying for an actual structural change in the way Iran is governed. That is, he's, as far as I understand it, been suggesting that, you know, perhaps instead of a supreme leader, they need a council of some kind that would be, you know, made up of many people instead of a central figure to be the top rung of leadership in the country. And so there are, you know, there is deep animosity now between very powerful factions within the upper echelons of the Iranian government. So that's one thing. And the other thing, I mean, you said you were asking, would it go back to the way it was? And I definitely think that things may calm down on the surface, but the situation has fundamentally changed, I think, the thinking of people in the country. There has been a division created between those people who are quite happy with the kind of leadership that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad represents, and those people who are very upset with it. So this election has simply, you know, served to make those divisions concrete and served as a catalyst for people to kind of actually take sides in what is really a bigger debate about the way that they think their country should be run. Where on the one hand you have people who are generally quite socially conservative, and are very happy with the populist policies of Ahmadinejad, and on the other hand people who really want to see an Iran that is more open to the outside world, that is less isolated, that is more progressive, that has more social freedoms. And I personally think that latter camp is the majority of the population of Iran. So it really remains to be seen. I don't think that this current unrest is going to result in some kind of, you know, 1979-like overthrow of the government and replacing it with a completely different political system. I really don't think that that's in the cards. Excuse me.
Go ahead. If you need to cough, that's okay.
Pardon me. I've been on a plane all afternoon.
Certainly. Well, I won't keep you much longer. I don't want to, you know, ruin your voice or anything. I'm wondering.
That's all right.
I'm wondering a little bit. The debate here in the States has become clear. I mean, as it always does, it seems, has kind of devolved into this political battle over what the President Obama should be saying or shouldn't be saying publicly. Does anyone on the streets in Iran, people that you're talking to, have an impression of whether they want our president to say anything, to be involved in this? Does anyone even care? What's the sense of that, if you can talk about that at all?
Well, look, I mean, everyone is looking out for their own, you know, their own angle on this. I mean, the supreme leader and those surrounding him, the Ahmadinejads of Iran, are using this moment to say, basically, to play the card of, you know, scapegoating the West and the outside world and saying they are interfering in our internal policies. And this is a very powerful card to play. I mean, that really resonates with a lot of Iranians, you know, who have had a great deal of outside interference in their affairs in their history, including from the United States, the overthrow of the democratic Iranian government in 1953 by the CIA, and also, you know, the machinations of the British and the control of Iranian resources, and prior to that, all kinds of other invasions and takeovers and subjugation. So Iranians are very sensitive to outside interference, and that's something that Americans would do well to understand. And I think it's something that the Obama administration does, in fact, understand. It's a stark contrast to the Bush administration, where, you know, the Obama administration really seems to be paying attention to diplomatic strategy. And their diplomatic strategy, it seems to me, is to look at this and say, okay, well, what is the likelihood that this current unrest is actually going to unseat the current government? Well, at the moment, I think that their analysis is that likelihood is small. So they would really like to engage on some level diplomatically with the Iranians in order to solve various problems that they would like to solve. Like, they would like Iran's help in dealing with certain issues in Iraq, Afghanistan, and the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Those are things which actually can't really be solved without substantial involvement of Iran. And the Obama administration people are smart enough to know that. So they're trying to keep the door open for a diplomatic engagement with Iran and not come out swinging like the French and the British and the Germans, who have basically all said, we think this election is a complete fraud, and, we support the people who are out in the streets throwing rocks at police. And you know, if those people who are out on the streets disappear in a few days, well, you no longer have any kind of diplomatic opening with the government that you've just been saying is completely illegitimate. Now, on the other hand, I think that the Iranian government has let things spiral so far out of control, and in fact, they've behaved in such a way that even if the election was completely legitimate, they themselves have lost basically all of their international legitimacy. And that's their own fault. I mean, it's no one's fault but their own. I mean, they could have played these cards very, very differently, in such a way as to placate the opposition, as to make a compromise, take such actions as would have increased the confidence in people in the fairness of the government. They didn't do that. In fact, they did the opposite, where they came down and said, you know, you have to trust us, you have to obey us. Any dissent will be crushed, and people really don't like that. So that, combined with the, you know, the media exposure around the violent acts of the Iranian government in the form of the police against protesters, the killing of protesters, the mass arrests, the clampdown on the media, the scapegoating of the West, all of these things mean that the more knee-jerk reaction that most politicians have in the United States and elsewhere, as we've now witnessed in Congress, is going to really rule the day. It will be impossible for the Obama administration to engage in bilateral talks with the current government in Iran, I think, politically. We'll see what happens, but I think that the Iranian administration has, in an attempt to solidify their power internally in Iran, also, perhaps unwittingly, made it completely, really destroyed their own legitimacy outside Iran, and now they're in a bind. I think the reason you haven't seen the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei coming out very strongly against the United States in particular, although he's come out very strongly against Britain and other countries, is that they must realize in the back of their mind somewhere that that they have created a situation that they cannot now reverse. And it's going to be very difficult for them to deal with the outside world, and they really need to deal with the outside world. Now, the exception to that would be countries like China, like Russia, who don't care at all about human rights and are perfectly willing to deal with whatever government is in power, and they don't care about the opinion of their own people toward that involvement. And so I think that one of the results of this current situation in Iran is going to be to push Iran more toward countries like Russia and China and farther away from the West, simply because the West isn't going to want to deal with them because of the popular sentiment in Western countries. And China and Russia are going to see a great advantage in having closer ties with Iran and its vast oil and natural gas reserves.
I want to ask you one last question. There's an image or a piece of video that has become very iconic, at least in Western media, and I'm wondering what sort of impact it's had on the ground in Iran. It's the video of the killing of Neda Sultan. I mean, she's been dubbed the Angel of Freedom here in the West, for example. Is this the Western media basically trying to put a face on this to sell newspapers, or is she legitimately, has she become a face in Iran as well, a rallying point, her death? If you could talk about that at all.
Well, look, I mean, I can't say that I'm, you know, that I spent a lot of time in the midst of the people who are organizing these rallies. I don't really know what their thinking is. I do talk to people who were out on the streets and participating in these protests, including the more recent, more violent protests. I didn't get a sense from them that that Neda is some sort of now Joan of Arc of the movement. You know, look, I mean, they're in a situation which they understand pretty well. You know, people are getting killed. People are being arrested en masse. Most of the people who are participating in those political actions on the streets of Tehran and other cities are now worried that as things start to quiet down after the government gets done arresting the kind of top tier of that political movement, they'll move down gradually to arrest everybody else who was involved in it in any way. And so, you know, people are concerned about the realities of their situation. They're concerned about, you know, what their strategy is going to be going forward. People are worried about what the real impact of this is going to be in their own lives. I think the Western media does, as you said, you know, have a need to put a face on things and make a kind of Hollywoodization of a situation. That's not necessarily the reality as it's playing out on the ground. I mean, you know, anywhere between 20 and 50 people at least have been killed so far in this thing. Neda, I think, is just one of those people. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, all of those people are angels of freedom. And I don't really think that Iranians are drawing a huge distinction between them.
And I want to make sure, what's the name of the documentary that you're working on right now? Have you titled it? Is there a working title for it?
No, there isn't. And in fact, at the moment, it's not clear that I'll ever finish it because, you know, I've been kicked out of the country now for the second time while I'm working on this film. The first time I was out of the country for not able to return for 10 months and then not able to restart the project for another 3 or 4 months after I did return. So at this point, I'm not sure when I'll be able to go back to Iran, if ever. And so it may be that my film will remain unfinished. It's not clear to me at this point.